5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's me, Duncan, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. And today is Monday, January the 30th, 2017. If you're an internet denizen, as I am, if you're a Redditor or anyone who goes on any info site or news site, then you are currently getting a big blast of hot piss sprayed into your ear holes and orbital sockets by the media. We can feel it, man. There's a thing happening right now. It's a big thing, a real big thing, and it means a lot, and it's scary, and it's supposed to freak us the fuck out, or at least keep us magnetized to the goddamn news. Really, what you're seeing here is something that appears to be a new thing at first glance. That's why they call it the news. It's new. But really, what it is a very old thing taking on a new form, and it's a repeating pattern, and it goes all the way back to the story of Buddha, the story of Jesus in the desert, or any story that involves the awakening of the individual in the midst of an insane universe. These stories are wonderful because they all share a similar pattern, and the pattern is this: a being is called to go out into the desert, go out into the forest, go to a cave, go somewhere away from society. They go to that place, and there they are met by Satan, by Mara, by forces of confusion that attempt to distract them from the task at hand. And that task, of course, is their own personal awakening. So you can look these things up. Jesus goes in the desert and Satan appears and asks him to throw himself off a temple so the angels will save him, or to bow down to him and he'll make him the Lord of the world, or to turn rocks into bread. Basically, he's asking Jesus to use black magic. Black magic being magic that is only for the self, that is purely just to empower the self at the cost of other people. And anytime you make decisions that are solely based on your own well-being or your own egocentric desires, then you inevitably end up hurting other people. Because by not taking the steps that you need to take to begin to wake up, develop compassion, empathy, the ability to love even when somebody isn't acting the way you want them to act. Anytime you aren't doing that job, which is the job here, if you ask me, that's the real 8-hour-a-day job. Anytime you've taken a vacation from that job, then you end up hurting people. You end up making mistakes that backfire and make people around you who love you feel horrible. And it doesn't, the problem with it is it doesn't happen all at once. You could just sort of, I'm speak from experience here, friends. When you fall away from the path and you get caught up in the material world and you get stuck in your own fucking head and your own shit and you're just thinking about what you want and your desires, it doesn't seem right away like you're hurting people. It doesn't seem, it's just like any other, like alcoholism. At first, it doesn't seem like you're hurting people. You're just having drinks, you know? But then over time, as the poison begins to work into your heart, then you end up becoming a little more abrasive, a little more brusque, a little lazier, a little less focused. You become a little bit more of an asshole. And when this reaches its apex, this is known as the hitting bottom moment. So that's what happens. You just end up cratering out in some way or another if you end up getting fixated on the self, which is a natural thing to do because the self is the first thing that you come into contact with when you have any kind of awareness. The self is the thing that you're currently experiencing. So you don't have to beat yourself up about this. It just is the way it is. So this old story, the being is drawn into the wilderness. And that's the other cool thing about it. Quite often, at least in the Quran and the New Testament, you're kind of called to the wilderness, which is really an interesting thing. It's less a compulsion or it's less a decision than you are in some way or another drawn towards this place, the wilderness. Even in the Vaishnava Bhakti Yoga, the mythology of Krishna, there's a story of called the Rasa Leela of Krishna playing his flute in the forest, and all those who hear the flute are sort of drawn to where Krishna is, abandoning their daily activities or whatever they were doing that night because they hear this irresistible sound, which is the sound of God playing music. And what could be better than that? So they're drawn away from the... These days, it would be a bunch of us sitting in our apartments hearing this beautiful flute and putting our phones down to go towards that flute. And so you hear it again and again and again, the draw of the unknown, the draw of the divine pulling us away from our egocentric activities into the unknown. And when you are in the unknown, you are met with temptation of some kind or another. The other quality that pops up here when folks are drawn into the wilderness is the necessity for discipline. Jesus fasted for 40 days. Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree and said, I'm not leaving this spot until I get enlightened. And I'm not sure what Muhammad went through, though. I'm sure it was some form of discipline, something. It repeats again and again and again. This, and you hear it from the teachers, too, like Salzburg and Cornfield, that you have to have a practice. You have to have some discipline practice. Part of becoming fixated on the self and egocentric is the daily practice goes away. I speak from experience. That's the first thing that drops away is whatever it is that you do, waking up in the morning and chanting or praying or meditating. First thing that goes away, that goes away. It's inconvenient. You have shit to do that's way more important, like what? Surfing the internet, sending emails, whatever it is. You always have something more important to do than that. So that's the first thing that falls away. So there's a lot of interesting repeating patterns here, which is you're called into the wilderness, and there in the wilderness, you get a chance to discipline yourself, to exercise some kind of strength that maybe fell away from you. And you're compelled to exercise this strength because you've heard the sound of a kind of transcendental truth that has made whatever your human activities were seem a little less important. So this is an old story, and I think what we're seeing happening right now is just a repetition of the same old fucking story, which is a group of worldly humans, Trump and his cabal of fucking billionaires, have jumped in front of the cameras and are trying desperately to convince the people that by bowing down to them, they will achieve some kind of prosperity, some kind of extra powers. Make America great again. America will become great. Bow to me and America will become great. And it's just the same old story, only it's happening to an entire country instead of to the individual. It's like collectively we're experiencing that moment of the thing, the tempter popping up in front of us, trying to convince us in some way or another that they're more important than God, that they're more important than the process of waking up, that they're more important than compassion or empathy or the risks that go along with compassion and empathy. And it's a convincing argument that they make, a very convincing argument. That's why so many people are entranced by them. When you hear, oh, fuck, we have to do this. We have to make our country safe. We must build walls. We must keep people out. It sounds very convincing. It did to me when I was listening to it. If you just sort of don't think about it at all and just listen, then yeah, it kind of is like, okay, I get it. Yeah, some of that does make sense. We can't just let anyone in here. There are lunatics out there that want to get into here. But then when you consider that if these truly are, as many people say they are, trained bad dudes, then they're going to get here anyway. That being said, stronger borders, probably not the worst idea on planet Earth. But when you begin to look at the execution of the idea, you'll always find that in the execution of the idea, there is some kind of horrific, catastrophic negation of basic human compassion and empathy. And that seems to be the MO for most American presidents. On the surface level, it's like, look, we just have to do this. We've got to do the drones. We've got to drop drones on people and some kids are going to get exploded. That was Obama's thing. You know, you got the drones are better than what the other shit that we might have to do. Always some kind of rotten fucking excuse for blowing up kids. Always some rotten excuse for separating children from their parents. Always some rotten excuse for hurting people, you know? Like and then this is kind of nonchalantly delivered. For example, the repeal and replace of Obamacare. Well, we know they're going to try to repeal Obamacare. We don't know what the replacement is yet. Hopefully there will be one. But what that does is, and what just seems to be completely overlooked by the current fucking regime that's dancing in front of the fucking cameras and getting into our brains in almost every second, is that there's a lot of mothers right now who either have some sickness or have children who have some sickness that don't know if they're going to be able to get the treatment they need because they don't know what their replacement is yet. So, and this just gets overlooked. The massive anxiety, the massive, massive anxiety that goes when you're sick, when you're really sick, it is obviously one of the most anxious states that you can get into because you're facing your own mortality. When you add to it a big question mark, like, yeah, I don't know if you're going to be able to get the chemotherapy you need after this thing gets repealed because we haven't said we're going to replace it yet, even though we say we're going to replace it, we haven't said with what, then what you do is you add this extra fucking stress to people who are already sick. So this is an aggression. This is an actual aggression. You're hurting people at that point. So, but this is an old story. This is a very, very old story, which is the Lord of the Earth appears to the individual or to the people, expresses some ability that they will imbue upon the people. They will make America great. They will give you this thing or that thing. And it's always a rotten trade in the long run, because what you are sacrificing when you offer them whatever the fucking thing is that they want is your own awakening, the awakening of the individual. So, knowing this and recognizing that we are in not some new territory here, but we are experiencing a very old archetype, which is the temptation in the wilderness, the seduction of the initiate in the beginning phases of awakening, we should be excited. Because whenever that happens, and when it happens in such an amplified way like it's happening right now, and you begin to see the people emerge in the airports, in the parks, in the streets, and you see how colorful the people are. That's one of the qualities I really love about it, is you see the colors. They're beautiful. There's like a beautiful superorganism. And it's an incredible thing to watch. So when you see that there's a kind of condensation of love happening in reaction to the chest pounding and posturing of a small group of billionaires who desperately need us to think they're important, not only for their own psychic well-being, because some of them are fucking psychotic narcissists, but also for them to successfully achieve whatever their ridiculous plans are. They require our allegiance. They can't do it alone. They require us to believe in them. They require us to see them as being important, to see them as being more important than compassion, is more important than love, is more important than the transcendental perennial principles that have always succeeded in allowing the individual to wake up and theoretically the society to wake up, theoretically. So when you're being tested, it's a good thing. That's what I'm trying to say here. And I could have said it in the very beginning, 15 minutes ago. When you're being tested, it's a good thing. It's a good thing because it means that you are at the end of some training, or at least you're hitting a milestone in a training process. When the test comes, it's a good sign. Failing the test, it's okay to fail a test, because the university that we're in right now has some very compassionate teachers, but they're compassionate on the universal scale. Sometimes failing the test can mean obliteration, a temporary obliteration. But passing the test, it's an amazing chance. That's all. You're given a chance. And when you see these obvious signs that there's an archetype emerging, we've seen it before. We've seen this before. We know what happens when you fail this particular kind of test, and we know what happens when you pass this kind of test. So what to do? Fuck if I know, friends. I don't want to give any kind of advice about what to do. I'm just seeing the pattern here. And what it is we are being tested in the classic way. A very powerful, wealthy entity is parading around in front of our fucking cameras, trying to convince us that he has some special power, that there is some extra thing that he can do that we as the people can't do without him. It's just the oldest trick in the book. So that's what that is. What am I doing? I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm revisiting my practice. That's what I'm doing. Going back down into the fucking trenches, chanting again, breathing again, meditating again. I'm going to dedicate myself to doing this every day, apologizing to the people I need to apologize to for any of the fucking rotten harm that I've done in the midst of egocentric, seizure-like episodes of insanity that are a direct result of not buckling down and doing the thing that the smartest people I know have said in a billion different ways to do, which is to have a daily practice. That's what I'm going to do. And maybe go to some marches, maybe donate some money to the ACLU, keep my ear to the ground, see where I can help. And maybe that's not enough. but it's still more than what I've been doing. And just to do a little bit more than what you've been doing is to begin to pass the test, is to help all of us collectively pass this test, which we will definitely pass, no question. Because in this particular case, what we're witnessing is such a garish version of the tempter, such an obvious version of the old classic that I think it would be incredibly difficult for us to fall for this one this time. I mean, fuck. Like, at least other listen, you know, Obama, like, wore a nice suit. Like, he was great in that role of, like, blowing people up. Like, he was really good at confusing you. You know, like, you see that fucking super smart, intellectual, regal human being. And you know, like, he's somewhat responsible for the explosions that have obliterated families. And yet still, because on the surface he's so fucking magnanimous and so seemingly benevolent that it makes you think, like, shit, maybe we needed to blow up those kids. That's how good he was. But in this case, come on. There's no way this guy, this puffed up, fatty, Looney Tunes, tweeting nut job, is going to be able to pull off the same kind of shit past presidents have pulled off, because he has the fucking charisma of a goddamn bloated tick trembling on the back of a fucking dog. No offense, those Trump supporters out there, but you know my position so far on most presidents or potential presidents has been, in general, there's some mental illness happening there. There's something off in all of them. Something really fucking off. Just a lot of it has to do with the lifetime of simmering in the fucking political cauldron. And being, you know, living the world of the political, I guess. It just drives you fucking nuts. In this case, this is a different kind of insanity altogether. It's an oligarch billionaire who knows. But I will say this: if we use the map that is presented to us from the perennial philosophy, if we look at the archetype of the thing, then we know what to do. And that thing that we have to do is not bow down to the force trying to trick us into thinking it is our daddy, it is our savior, it is our protector, when we know the truth. Individually, we are our saviors, because we are the ones who establish the connection. We are the ones who respond to the call of the flute in the wilderness. We are the ones who go wandering out there to experience temptation. That's us. It's us. That's us. Us and the divine. That's all that matters, that connection. And any kind of puffed up thing that pops in between that connection is the tempter. And any time that that thing pops up, we should be excited, because it means that we are being tested, and to be tested means there's the opportunity to pass the test. And in this case, passing this particular test as a people could potentially mean a transformative moment for the entire planet. So it's exciting. So anytime that old red-faced tweeter starts stamping around in front of the camera, just smile. Thank him for playing this incredibly difficult role, that of the manipulative hypno freak who wants desperately for the entire planet to be fooled into thinking that he's special, when the truth of the matter is he's just a poor fabrication of an archetype that has had far more charismatic representatives in the past. Also, far more symmetrical, well-dressed, articulate, and interesting representatives in the past, with the ability to grow facial hair, P.S. Well, that's it for me. 22 minutes, had to get it off my chest. It's helping me process what I've been thinking about for a while. I hope you guys pass the test and do whatever the thing is you need to do to make sure that when you go out there in the streets or to your office or wherever you may go, you've got a little bit of an extra glow that makes people feel a little bit better and a little less freaked out by the tap dancing of old Trumpy. All right, pals, we got a great podcast for you. There's going to be more political talk. Forgive me, this is going to be a political episode, I guess. Johnny Pemberton's here. First 20 or 30 minutes is us freaking out over the classic thing that everyone's freaking out about. The last 30 minutes is Johnny telling us about a particularly challenging LSD trip he just experienced. I hope you'll stay tuned. But first, some quick business.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Here we go. Let's dive right into this episode with my dear friend Johnny Pemberton, who is now a TV star. You've probably seen him on Son of Zorn. He's also been in a bunch of movies. He's got a fantastic podcast on Feral Audio called Twisting the Wind, and he has a new podcast endeavor called Live to Tape. I was a guest on it recently, and it was one of my favorite podcasts that I've ever been on, so definitely check that out. But before you do that, please rip those chest cavities open, tear out that blackened heart, scrub it off with the sonic love beaming from the sweet, beautiful lipstick lips of my dear friend, Johnny Pemberton.
Fucking thing.
I get that sometimes.
Isn't that crazy, that steel thing?
Isn't that nuts? Just those fucking RF hits will come in the very worst time when you're on the border and you're about to pick up some illegal aliens who've crossed over, and then you get that RF hit and they run.
How do I sound? Do I sound a good volume?
You sound good. Let me just do a quick check. Johnny Pemberton, welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Too long. You're so far away from me. How are you, my friend?
Too long, so gone. I'm great. I'm really great. Super great. I'm just making sure these levels are good and quality.
The waveform looks really good on this side, I gotta say.
See, I wish I could see that.
Oh, it's beautiful. A big, fat, perfectly nuanced, not too loud. Man, are you shitting bricks right now like all your other libtard friends out there in LA?
Is that why you moved, to get away from the libtards?
Had to get away from the social justice warriors.
Yeah, there's none of them in New York, huh? I heard about that.
Not a single one. They all left. They all went to LA.
They moved to Washington where they could effect greater change.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There's a what is your right now? It's the strangest thing. I mean, I don't know if it's just the people I follow on Twitter or if we're actually entering into the apocalypse. What do you think?
I feel like it's hard to say, actually, because I feel like this. I'm in the same place. We probably follow a lot of the same people and the same news. So I feel like anything I know is subject to, like, it's been tuned. It's been turned up. You know what I mean? It's like louder than it normally would be.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. It seems kind of like a flood. That's what it seems like.
A flood. Just a never-ending, like, constant stream of people losing their shit on Twitter. It's probably just Twitter. Well, it's also Trump is losing his shit, too, on Twitter. It's the president is also tweeting crazy shit.
There's just so much coming in and out all the goddamn time. It's like, what do you focus on? Like, there's all the identity stuff, all the stuff with all the social stuff. But then there's all this crap with the environment and the EPA and all that stuff. So it's just like, it's an onslaught. So you don't even know. There's too many things. There's too many damn things to even focus on.
The National Park Services can't tweet anymore. The clampdowns the press secretary is at war with fucking Dippin' Dots.
Is that a thing? See, there's so much stuff that happens. I can't even fucking keep up. I see the references before I see the actual news.
That is the truth, man. That is the truth. The press secretary, let's see, what's his name? Spicer. Yeah, Sean Spicer.
The Spice Man.
So Sean Spicer, listen to this. Sean Spicer, the press secretary.
Oh, it's Sean Spicer, okay.
Yeah, Sean Spicer, who just tweeted his password, by the way. I don't know if you saw that.
No, well, how did he do that?
He just, no, you know, like he just tweeted like L A capital B C V L, like a password.
Oh my God, he did that?
Yeah. Yeah. But the crazy thing here is that, like, this guy has tweeted many times. Here, I'll just read a few. This is from his Twitter. Dippin' Dots is not the ice cream of the future. If Dippin' Dots.
He said that?
Yes.
He said that.
Yes. He's at war with Dippin' Dots.
Why would he say that?
I think it's fun. I mean, you want to believe it's because he's fucking hilarious is what you want to believe.
He's making a joke, right? He's trying to be funny.
I don't know.
He has to be.
Well, no, because like he's like he keeps it up. I mean, if it's a joke, it's a really good line. Like, here's what he tweeted.
This is too good. I didn't even know this shit, man.
In April 7th, 2010, he tweets, Dippin' Dots is not the ice cream of the future.
And okay, is that the first one?
That's the first one. Now let's move on. This is a September 22nd, 2011.
Same year.
He tweets, I think I've said this before, but Dippin' Dots are not the ice cream of the future. And then he tweets, ice cream of the past. This is in November 4th. Ice cream of the past. Dippin' Dots files for bankruptcy. And then his final tweet is, if Dippin' Dots was truly the ice cream of the future, they would not have run out of vanilla.
I just don't understand anything. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, it makes sense to me that he's a guy who, 2011, what was he doing? Was he in college? I mean, it was probably... He wasn't doing anything close to being a press secretary, that's for sure, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, if it is a joke,
right?
And if it is an extended joke, then it's hilarious. Then he's great. Spicer is great. If that's a real joke, Spicer's pretty funny.
I think that's just him trying to be funny.
I don't know. I hope it is. If it is, it makes me really like him. As nefarious as he may be, and as much. The thing that, like, not to get all political on you.
Not to get all political. What do you mean? We've already been doing that.
The creepy thing is the Trump's obsession with the size of his inauguration.
That and also the polling numbers.
Yeah. Like, he's really kind of, you could see that he's got the kind of mind that gets stuck on shit like that. Like, he can't let it go. And we're rolling. Sorry, guys. We had a bit of a sound fuck up. So, Johnny,
we're good.
You, what's going on with you, man? Tell me everything. You're shooting. Are you still shooting that TV show?
Kidding me? I wish I was. I'm doing a goddamn thing right now.
So you're on break.
Yeah, I'm on. That's a great way of putting it. Break. I don't know what they should have a name for it. They call it hiatus. They call it break. But it really should just be called reevaluating your identity in a vacuum.
Oh, why are you reevaluating your identity? Is it because there's no word on whether Son of Zorn's going to get picked up, and that's a weird place?
Yes, that's true.
So you're kind of on the classic TV crucifix right now, where you have to wait for some phone call coming through that they're going to do it or not do it.
You got it. That's it. It's essentially that. Just sort of in limbo. But the problem is you can't really do anything else. You're not allowed to do other things except sort of things like you're allowed to win the lottery. You're allowed to do that. You're allowed to do films, which is the same as doing winning the lottery. But that's about it. So
don't you whenever I've been in those kinds of situations, nothing as extreme as what you're in there. But you think about, like, God, who's making the decision? Two, how long does it take to make the decision? You know, like your mind kind of whirls wondering who is it a group of people? Do they meet every day? Seems like, it seems like the kind of thing where you could just say, yeah, let's do that again. Or no, like what is the data that they're analyzing to come up with a decision?
Well, I think they've already made a decision. The problem is not, I mean, it's not really interesting, or I also feel like I'm not at that much liberty to talk about it, but it is a thing where they have to figure out some, it's not, at this point, it's not so much what they want to do, it's what we can do with what we have, kind of with who's available to work on the thing.
Why? Because it took so long for the decision to be made that now that people might have jumped the ship or something?
No, it's because they have to find someone new to run the show.
I got it. Yeah, that simple makes sense.
So it's something I also, it's like talking about, it's kind of...
You can't talk about it.
I mean, I can, but I feel like it's one of those things where you're just pissing in the ocean / yeah, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like putting something out there that isn't really, it's not, I'm not asking for anything. I'm just sort of saying words that don't really mean anything.
Well, yeah, but at a deep, you know, at a deeper right. level, what you're going through is considered to be one of the least palatable things a person can go through, because being in a state of unknowing, our entire being is against that state of not knowing. Mm-hmm. We want to feel like we are secure and safe, and those kinds of mind fucks, they rattle me, man. They really do.
Yeah, because you can't – your future is undetermined. So it's like you can't make plans. You can't like move towards something, because you don't know if this big thing will come up and say, oh, well, you were going to go there and do this? Actually, we have this thing that's going to be happening, or yeah. Vice versa. It's like, oh, you're planning on coming with us on this journey? I'm sorry, but we're no longer going there.
Yeah, yeah. See, this is the – this is like, and I, honest to Christ, I don't want to do a Trump talk with you, man, but like, this is the thing that I don't know how many people are aware of.
Donald Trump?
The torture that man is putting a huge swath of people through, mm-hmm. who don't know if they're going to lose health care. And like, so like, there's so many sick people. You know, this is where it's fucked up, is like, when you say, yeah, we're going to repeal this thing, but we're going to replace it, but then you don't say you're going to replace it with what, then you leave so many people who are like physically ill in this, like, in the same state you're in, except not, it's not like, oh, am I going to have a job? It's, am I going to be able to exist in a year?
Yeah, you put them in the lurch.
You put them in a fucking lurch, man. A lot of people are feeling it right now. A lot of people are in the lurch. Like, that seems to be the main thing that's driving people insane right now, is nobody really knows how this shit's gonna fall, like, come out.
There's just so many things that are changing. And that's what we were talking about before. That's what I keep thinking about. You hear, okay, I'm not a woman, and I'm not a Muslim, and I'm not a gay person. So those are three things that I don't have to worry about for myself, at least in terms of. I'm worried about that. So just that, even with that off the table, even with all those sort of things off the table that those people are terribly worried about, you hear about environmental stuff and all these other things that are going on. It's like there's so many. It's like being attacked by zombies from all sides. It's like a flood where you can't just hold the floodwaters back. You have to move to you have to like leave the area that's being flooded. That's what it feels like. It feels like this thing where you're being inundated with change that's all seems very negative.
Yeah, that's what it is.
What do you do? What do you fucking do?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
that's the question.
That's the problem. Yeah. I think there's a lot of things you could do that aren't political. You can get off Twitter.
Yeah,
you could stop.
Sure.
Because really, I mean, unless you're someone who really does have some kind of plan, like unless you've worked out something that you're going to do politically, maybe you're going to run for office or something. I don't know the point of tormenting yourself too much by paying attention to it. Know where your local fallout shelter is, and then I guess that's pretty much what you could do. Then just try to be.
Yeah, you can get really pissed at your neighbors for using a two-stroke motor leaf blower. You can really like chart the times that they're doing it and bring it to them and show them that you've been listening and you know. And so you can just, you know, do stuff like that.
Are you having that problem?
I mean, it's sometimes, but it's like a thing where I think about that. It's like this is where – it's like that. I'm thinking about a fucking the sound of a leaf blower, and you know that things are bothering you as if you're worried about the sound of a leaf blower.
Right.
And it's like the irritability indexes go through the roof right now across the country.
Like the thing like, you know, you can – that's really good, man. You can – one gauge of your mental health – is how annoyed you get by leaf blowers.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're really fucking bothering you, something else is going on for sure.
Yeah. But the thing is, here's the catch, is that leaf blowers actually are bad. So it's this thing, you know, that whole, just because you're paranoid doesn't, what is that? It's a Kurt Cobain.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean that's a leaf blower.
Yeah, exactly. So even though you're annoyed by leaf blowers, you actually should be annoyed by them because they're bad and they're illegal.
Well, yeah, so you should be annoyed by leaf blowers. That's true. But you know what? The other thing I've noticed is if I'm annoyed by leaf blowers, then you know what else I'm going to get annoyed by? On an airplane, I'll get annoyed if someone's arm touches mine, right? That's another sign that shit isn't working in my brain, right? You know, and that when you're at that place or when you start like becoming hyper aware of someone bumping the back of your seat or – like, and it fills you with a kind of rage. Okay, yeah, something else is going on there. Something.
You want to smash.
Yeah, you want to kill them. You're like, how dare your shoulder brush mine, sir?
How dare you touch me with that filth?
I paid for this seat. I paid good money for this seat, and the armrest is mine.
I have paid more than you. I know it.
You see these people popping, man, popping, just really, really slipping into bad states. I don't know if you saw the video of the anti-Trump lady getting thrown off the airplane. Did you see that one?
Are you serious?
She's sitting next to this guy who's filming it, and I guess he's like flying to wherever, to the inauguration, I think.
Okay.
And she's like, The stewardess comes up and is like, is everything okay? And the lady's like, no, it is not okay. I do not want to sit next to this man. I want to move to another seat. And the stewardess is like, no, you can't do that.
This is your seat. We're moving.
Yeah, we're not fucking moving. You have to deal with it. And then she was like, she said some shit to the guy like, you don't believe in science? Is that what you did? she like just starts attacking this guy, man. And like they threw her off the fucking goddamn airplane. Yeah. And all over the world, man, people are having these little mini meltdowns right now. It's fucking nuts.
It's weird. It makes sense, but it doesn't. Well, it doesn't make sense to – I mean, it makes sense why it's happening, but it doesn't make sense to do that. It's a not good thing. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Don't set people's hair on fire. Did you see that one?
See, I think this is the thing is I've kind of either on purpose – I guess on purpose, maybe not directly on purpose, but I've kind of checked myself out from a lot of that stuff just because – I feel like as much as all the bad news is inundating, I feel like it's like this chore. It's almost like a job of having to look, to be aware of it all. And I just, it exhausts me.
Yeah.
But the hair thing sounds fun. That sounds interesting.
Well, the hair thing's good. That was like another Trump supporter came to the ladies' march, the women's march. And I don't know. I guess she's like saying some Trump shit. And then some sneaky little fucking cunt in the background slides her hand, you know, like sneaks in with a lighter and sets this woman's hair on fire.
Jesus fucking Christ. That's one of like the worst things you can possibly do to a person.
You could, yeah, like thank God people, someone put it out. Like a guy like patted it out for her. And then like
someone's hair on fire.
Cowardly. And like to do like a covert, like sneaky, like lighter blast, like you just sort of like
lighter blast.
Your fucking arm whips through the crowd and poof, suddenly you've set a person's hair on fire. You know, it's like where is the overt resistance? Not, you know, like the people, I don't know if you saw the people who hung the resist sign in front of the White House. Did you see that?
Trump on the crane?
Yeah, that was cool.
That was real?
I think that's real, yeah.
See, I just don't know. But I believe it's real. It looked pretty real to me.
Yeah, that was, I think it was, I think that was real. I mean, that's the other fucking problem. Every single bit of data that we are getting from the internet is to be scrutinized in the most extreme way. Is this CIA conditioning? Who's conditioning? Is this Russian conditioning? CIA conditioning? Is this the states conditioning me? What is it? So now yeah, we're all flabbergasted.
I had a realization about it last night, actually.
Yeah?
I think, okay, because you know how when Trump won, there was no one leading up to the election. There's very few people in any mainstream media outlet that said that predicted his win. It was like landslide for Hillary everywhere.
Right.
Especially all like the big-time pollsters that everybody loves, like Nate Silver and all those people like that. They were just – everyone had Hillary. Everyone had Hillary. And then Trump wins – by this pretty big margin in terms of electoral college goes, you know, and he wins that much. So, and it's by him winning and by all these mainstream outlets predicting otherwise, he's basically able to inherit this distrust of the news. So yeah. All these people, I mean, he hasn't said it outright. He should, if he was smarter or someone was smarter or maybe, I don't know what. But they should be saying that shit to the news, like, okay, you're reporting this fact. You're also the people who like reported with like a 99% accuracy that Hillary Clinton was going to win, and she didn't. So they basically can say that. They can say your news is fake because you got this thing wrong, so wrong. How should we? Why should we trust you on anything else if you got this as wrong as you did?
Not a bad point.
And it's like, wow. I guess it kind of. I mean, that would make sense in a way. It's this thing where. Ugh. It's just so, everything's so wishy-washy. There's such a – it just makes you want to go to the fucking mountains.
Oh, you can feel that cabin up there pulling you in, can't you? Just
– yeah.
Or yeah, the fantasy of like living in another country or like going to like Mars, like watching this from the International Space Station.
Yeah.
Some particularly safe place. But you know what? All of this stuff – I think it's just mostly – it's got to be histrionics. Like
how, yeah, I think so.
It's got to be. This is the classic trick of the media. Like, for example, remember fucking Ebola? Do you remember what they did to us with Ebola?
Right.
I mean, my friend – I had a friend who was ready to fucking take his family to a shelter.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he was so convinced. He's like, I talked to my friend. He's a doctor. He says that this is going to mutate. It's going to spread. It will not stop. And he was serious. It's like, no, because you were like that. The same friend, he got like that with Y2K. He got like that with just about every single major horror story that the news is telling in front of the people of the world. That's the trick, is to not get sucked in, and I fucking just do.
Well, it's fun. It's a fun. It's not fun like a going down a slide at a park, but it's fun in the sense where it's constantly engaging. It's like they're professionals. The media's main job seems to be not so much about telling stories and telling the truth, but about drumming things up and making them exciting and putting them on like a, well, you know those things they used to stir stuff in the lab? It's like a little, you push the test tube on it and it vibrates.
Yes.
It.
Yes.
It's like they're just putting the whole fucking country on this vibration plate that goes, and it's like, yeah, it's an, you know what it's called? It's called an agitator. Yeah. That's all it is. It's just like they're agitating the shit out of everything. They just take everything and they just turn it up. But they're so good at it. So it's fun to be engaged. It's like you're being a part of this cool – it's like just being a part of something. You're part of the news. You're checked in right now. You're jacked into to 275 Blitzer Town. We're going to tell you what's going on. We've got an update coming in 5 minutes. But until that 5 minutes happens, we're going to talk about what's going to be happening with the update. Okay, we're going to go to Jenny Jackson. She's going to tell you. It's like – just. It's the nonstop. It feels good to be plugged into something. It feels fucking great.
Part
of this story.
Yeah, it feels, I guess so. It feels good until you realize you are just letting your psyche get manhandled by these corporations.
Yeah.
Just shoving their nasty fucking hands into your brain pan and just scooping out happiness and throwing it in the mud and replacing it with some kind of uneasy paranoia. I get fucking texts from people. I just got a text from a friend today. Do you think this is the end? You know, like people really, really, really are scared right now. Do you have? You're one of my most apocalyptic. But you're one of my most apocalyptic friends.
Yeah, but I've changed quite a bit, you know, over the years. I think
because you used to think we were going to run out of oil. Remember that?
Yeah, and we still probably will, but it will be something that won't be. I mean, that's the thing. All the people I used to read have always talked about. They don't talk about it like it's an apocalypse. They talk about it like it's a thing that's it's like a bumpy road. It just starts to – you get used to it. You get used to the discomfort until – like, yeah, it's not
you
a dramatic
You get used to
thing.
The discomfort until the whole thing falls apart and you're laying on the gravel getting chewed up by a lion.
I mean, maybe. That would be cool. That would be cool. But that's the thing is that all the stuff that they always talk about is that it's not – like it's just not classic story structure. It's not like a dramatic Hollywood type thing. It's a thing where it's a long. I mean, that's what Kunstler always calls it—the long emergency, where it's a thing where that's why people don't give a shit about anything. It's because nothing happens. Things don't happen in like swift movements like that. At least that's what all those guys.
The seasons don't happen like that. Nothing natural happens like that usually, yeah. Unless it's some catastrophe. Do you?
Right.
But what's your? You seem like you would have a plan. What's your plan? Have you worked out like, you know? Here I'm in New York now, and I'm. Yeah. I think fuck, man. What? Like what? What if stuff really did start going south? Like Trump loses his mind, goes to war with China. China's got ICBMs. You know, like you start thinking in that way. What's your plan? What would you do? And when would you do it?
I mean, what would I do? I guess it's all conditional though, right? Because what's the – if we're talking about what, like world war?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, world war. Like the first question is when for you, mm-hmm. when is the moment that you would go up into the woods, go to a cabin, go to some safe spot?
That's a tough one. I don't even know what – I don't know what that looked like because I kind of feel like – I mean, I personally feel that the threat of nuclear war is overblown. I don't think it'll happen just because I think that the human genome won't allow us to destroy ourselves.
Huh.
It's so selfish that it won't allow it.
Really?
So I feel like, yeah, I feel like that we got the taste of it with World War II. And I think at this point, it's probably like blind optimism, but I really think that humans, for the most part, are just – as much as there's all this war and enmity between people, in the end, when it comes down to it, we won't destroy ourselves with our own creation. I think it'll be something far less dramatic than a worldwide nuclear war.
That's fascinating.
I think it's just too obvious. It makes too much. It's like too simple of a thing to be worried about for it to be the thing that happens.
You don't see like someone like Trump just. Because something I've often thought before is what happens if the president goes insane? Like,
yeah.
You know, mutiny on the bounty happens for an entire country. What happens? Like, when is the – who's keeping track of the president's, like, mood? And is there someone who's like, wait, he really is becoming pathological here? When, no, I don't think there's anyone there. So, sure, I mean, I get the idea. Most sane people would not want to engage in anything that involves mutually assured destruction.
Right.
But what happens if the president begins sliding a little bit into la-la land? Because the pressure's too much, the heaviness of it's too much. You know, his wife isn't even going to live with him in the White House, you know?
She's not?
No.
This is very informative. Why isn't she?
Well, he said something about taking care of the kids in New York or something. But like he's, So he's in that fucking big ass house by himself.
God,
you know, with the slithering demons of the White House at night, just rising up from underneath his bed. Donald, you know you can trust no one, Donald. Just you. You know what to do. You know?
Donald, you must do what you feel is necessary.
You're the only one who can stop this, Donald.
Only you can stop China.
Only you can stop Mexico, Donald.
You must build that wall before the end of the year, Donald.
Donald, remember the dead dog you used to play with behind your house? That dog was Satan.
Suck on my dick tonight. I have two of them for you. Eat them.
Donald.
Eat my penis, Donald.
Eat my penis, Donald. Eat my penis. This penis fucked the dead dog you fucked.
Donald, remember when you had sex with the dead animal outside of your father's home?
Do you remember that day, the pungent smell of the rotting flesh? Do you remember, Donald, the milky eyes? You remember the way you wept, the way you wept, the way you came? You remember? China must be stopped. China.
Donald, do you remember?
Do you remember? See, you know, because you look at his... how tired he already seems. Like, you look, he's got, like, in the interview he did, his eyes were kind of bloodshot. He's like, you know, he's fucking tired. I don't think he's sleeping at all.
And the weirdest thing is just how obsessed he is with stuff that's already happened.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's just, like, you should be more of a badass than that.
Well,
like a fucking... Does Kobe Bryant care about a basketball game he lost a year ago?
I know. You shouldn't care.
Give a shit.
But it's I've seen people like this before. Their mind locks onto something and they can't let it go. And some people are just saying, like, for his ego identity to have, because he's like an entertainer, he is. As much as people might hate to say it, he's like a upper class, sophisticated person. He is
entertaining too. Like
incredibly entertaining.
He's fun to watch because he doesn't talk like a person who has that job. He talks like a he does weird asides and stuff. You know, he'll throw something. He'll say stuff under his breath, kind of, and like. He makes fun of people. He just makes fun of shit. It's not like any other president before. It's funny to watch.
It's amazing.
The problem is it's not funny in context, but it's funny if you're just watching. Like, oh, this guy, he's
funny.
Spoken extemporaneously many thousands of times, so he just fucking gets it.
No, to me, that is one of his great qualities. I think if you're somebody who's like making every aspect of him rotten, you're crazy. There's parts of him that are really, really, really funny and really cool. And I think that those parts, okay, so to be funny, there needs to be this sense of self-awareness. There needs to be a kind of lucidity there to like do the kind of comedy that he's doing. And that somebody like him, I think, and this is maybe his Achilles heel, desperately wants us to like him. Like he,
oh hell yeah,
that's what is killing him right now, is to have to like deal with the fact that he's achieved this incredible position, and he's never going to say it. He's like, oh, I'll, you know, I don't care. Just let's have a fucking cover band of a cover band play at the inauguration, Three Doors Down or whatever. Like, but inside, he's like, the smart people have turned against me. Mm-hmm. The intellectuals have turned against me. The women are marching against me, no matter what I do. That the other thing about it is, some of the shit that he wants to do is like doesn't seem that bad, like getting rid of the TPP or whatever the fuck that thing was. That was a good thing that he got rid of. But no one's going to say, oh, that was a really good thing that you got rid of there. No one's going to say that. So he's not getting any credit. Yeah. It's just he can only fail. For 4 years, he can only fucking fail. No matter what, if he succeeds or not. And that, for a normal president, that would just be like, all right, I'll deal with that. But for a person who maybe has a psychological need to be embraced and loved and worshipped and looked at as a hero, to know that, yeah, it doesn't really matter what you do, man.
You could, it's going to erode him. And that's why he says all that weird shit interviews where he brings up stuff like, you guys got this wrong. No, you guys got this. You remember you said this. You didn't guys get this right. You were wrong about this. He always says that. Even on the interview at the White House, he just keeps mentioning it.
Yeah. And that's
makes you feel sick.
That's where the nausea is coming from. I think if he was, I think if he was just like, yeah, fuck it, we're gonna build a wall, we're gonna keep out immigrants, we're gonna make it harder for people from countries that have Islamic terrorism happening to get over here. We're gonna get rid of the fucking healthcare because I'm a small government Republican, and that's a nightmare. Sorry, but we're going to do it. If he was doing all that stuff, not tweeting anything, just like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. Like, this is what I think is the right thing to do. But not tweeting, not misspelling, not stammering, not like
misspelling.
Because you know he's like fucking walking around the fucking White House at night, like half asleep.
Like Ebenezer Scrooge or something.
Yes, that's what he reminds me of. Scrooge.
Yeah. Maybe he'll have some sort of awakening. He'll get visited by Abraham Lincoln and like John Adams and shit, and it'll fucking, that'll be cool if it happened. I was thinking when I saw the interview how David Muir has those papers in his hand. And, you know, I recently had a brush of death with LSD.
Yes.
thinking how obviously they check like thoroughly any person who goes in the White House and is in punching distance of the president.
Yeah.
How cool would it be if you could have some way to like leave a bunch of LSD to somehow to bring it into the White House and get it into a place where Trump will absorb a lot of it? How cool would that be to like get that in there? And so he takes this massive like triple hit of LSD into the White House. Like, what would that look like?
He comes to a press conference wearing Native American garb, like a feather headdress, a leather tunic, some kind of staff. He says his name's White Eagle now. And that there will be no more war. And, yeah, that'd be amazing.
It'd be amazing.
But you know, I think he's done. Like I think Trump has done it.
Cancel the press conference, and they'd be like, "The president's sick." And really, he's not sick. He's just tripping balls for six, 7 hours. But maybe afterwards, maybe he'd have some clarity. I don't know.
I think he's done acid. I think like because that you know, of course, people are like, "Oh, if only we could give the president mushrooms or ayahuasca." It's like the eternal hippie dream. But I think Trump has done every drug under the sun. I think
you
Trump.
Think so?
Fuck yeah, he's partied. Like he hasn't done cocaine. And like if you've done cocaine, you've done all other things. He's like up in that like insane fucking apartment, the Trump Palace up there in his younger days, just snorting cocaine.
He doesn't drink though, right?
Who the fuck knows? Like he's like whatever he says. Who knows? Does he drink now? Probably not. I don't think he does now. But in his younger days, like this is a guy who is a billionaire with who owns the most property in New York City, I think that he probably went through a pretty significant drug period. I think he probably took psychedelics, mushrooms, definitely weed, definitely cocaine. Has he smoked DMT? I don't know. But I would say that our president has done psychedelics. I would be surprised if how would you avoid psychedelics going to like insane billionaire parties in New York with absolute access to anything that you want?
I wish I knew. I don't know. I mean, maybe those are really incredible. Maybe they're boring as shit, though. You know, that's the thing you always wonder about. But maybe this thing that's super exclusive and special is actually just the same as some boring thing. It's just louder, bigger, and brighter and shinier. Just shiny, boring.
Yeah, that's
that, maybe he did.
I like, you get to that level, and who knows? You're living in a whole different. You're at the very top of a sky palace, gazing down on a city. You could probably look out and see properties that you own. Like, you can look out from your palace and like, oh yeah, I own that. 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 Somebody comes over. What's up? Listen, are you still interested in having that threesome with the models that I arranged? You know,
are you still interested in that?
Yeah, sure, I guess so. Sure, do you want some like coke or like ecstasy or anything? What's this ecstasy stuff? All right, I'll try it. Sure. You know, of course. That's what's crazy. And in the fucking White House, I bet he's going to do that shit too, man. JFK did.
He did. He was a party boy.
Yeah, and yeah, this is the one that, and you know, I think there's a lot of things that Trump's gonna have in common with JFK if he doesn't stop pissing off the fucking CIA.
Yeah, maybe he's gonna have an early exit.
Man, I mean, that's the other side of it, is like he's infuriated the intelligence community. So like, you have a kind of unhinged billionaire who doesn't seem to be getting enough sleep, who has offended.
He's pissed off everybody.
Pissed off everybody. Everybody. And even the people around him who are acting like they like him, maybe they're just scared or something. Who knows? But
he does have that thing, that the dictator type thing. I was reading about this thing about how Saddam Hussein used to act. And I guess it's like this, it's a very common dictatorial behavior pattern where you change what you say a lot. So the people around you don't know, like let's say you say, I love pasta. I love pasta. It's my favorite thing to eat. And then the next day someone serves you pasta and you throw it on the floor like, I hate pasta. I never want to eat it again. And you create this environment where no one knows what the truth is because everything's met with this really high temperature reaction. So it's like this thing. I think some people have cultivated this on purpose. But it's definitely, I think, maybe an accidental thing as well for dictators. I know Saddam used to do that with like his friends and things like that. He would set up sort of social situations so that force people to sort of like be with him or against him, kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
And it's if you look at it, really, it's just like this weird personality disorder. But you can also look at it, oh, it's this thing. It's like a calculating, like Machiavellian thing, but who knows which is how much of one and how much of the other, or if at all. Maybe he is just a fucking lunatic, narcissist, and that's how it plays out.
I don't know. I think he's very calculated and very vengeful. But look, we don't have to keep getting stuck in this quagmire. I'm sure the audience has so sick of this fucking shit, so I apologize, you guys. Let's get to the important stuff. Johnny, tell me about this doom trip that you had recently.
Okay. I'll just go from the beginning here. So it was a weekday. It was a Thursday. Nice, beautiful Thursday. Actually, it wasn't beautiful, but it was beautiful to me. This was 2 weeks ago, I think. 2 weeks ago today.
So it's raining.
Yeah, it was raining. It was nice LA rain where the rain like stalls over the city and rains for like 12 hours. Not hard rain, but it's enough. It's trinkling. It's tinkling down.
Yeah.
It was like 11 a.m. I made myself a smoothie.
So you made yourself a smoothie.
Right. And I had this – I had some LSD I was given that I believe to be like a like a strong microdose, right?
I've sure.
taken microdoses a bunch, like in the 6 months prior. I had a bunch of microdoses that were really small, to the point where I had taken like two or maybe three of them as a microdose and felt really great and not felt like I was tripping at all. So
right.
I thought this was going to be the same case. So I thought this was like two strong microdoses. So I thought, oh, no problem. I'll take that. And I put in some, I had it after my smoothie. I drank it. It was like a little tiny bit of liquid, ate it up, and I was going to go running. And like I said, I've done a microdose probably 20 times at this
sure.
point. And it's always been nothing short of just really, I mean, no tripping. It wasn't stuff where
yeah.
at all I ever noticed anything that was like trip, but more just like the whole point of microdosing, which is energy and clarity and that
sure.
type of thing.
You wake up. It wakes you up.
Yeah, it wakes you up. I think the best analogy I thought of was that if Adderall speeds up your engine, microdosing LSD makes you feel like you have a bigger engine.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
So that's what I was looking forward to. Going running. Had to record a podcast that day. It was scheduled at 3. So I'm looking forward to this podcast. So I go running. I drive like 2 miles to this little park. It's a little hill, right? It's a little trail. And there's no one there because it's raining, because people don't like to do this in the rain. So that's great. I love being there when there's very few people.
Rolling.
Which is, I like that when there's a few people, because it's nice to be alone in there, because it's such a busy park. It's like a place where every asshole goes with their dog and they're nice. It's like you see a lot of people who have had plastic surgery in this place. It's
okay.
that kind of park. But it's a trail. It's a wooded, so it's pretty. It's up over the – it's in the hills over Studio City. So I park in the parking lot, and I get out of the car, and I start walking up the hill. And it's great. Got the perfect amount of clothes on. It's not raining hard at all. It's just like drip dripping, sprinkling, they say. And I start to feel the LSD. It's like, oh, that's pretty fast. But I just felt like –
How long – what do you know the span of time between when you took it and when you started feeling it?
I think this is about maybe 20 minutes, maybe
yeah.
half an hour.
See, that's something
– That's fast.
This is pure bro science. Mm. But there does seem to be with psychedelics, if it kicks in quickly, it means it's going to be a pretty powerful trip.
Really? I didn't know that.
That's
okay.
what my experience has been. This is purely anecdotal. I've never heard
bro
of
science.
Any. Pro science. But yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So I'm feeling it, and it's I'm going up this hill, and I'm just feeling the effects of it, like the normal sort of effects of having taken a small amount of LSD. But as I'm going up the hill, and more and more. It's probably only like 5 minutes, maybe less than 5 minutes at this point. I start to it just feels more and more. There's like this thrum, like sort of a heaviness, like a thickness that I'm feeling, kind of like a watery, like my whole body is gulping, like oh dear, like like that, like it's just this heavy thickness where I start to slowly realize that this is it's just more than I thought. I took more than I like quite a bit more than I thought I did, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm kind of tripping today. And I was like, okay, well, I can handle that. The podcast will be fun. I've tripped a lot. I can hold my own.
I can handle it.
No problem. Not just handle it. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Like I've recorded podcasts. I think I've recorded podcasts with you before where I was like,
sure.
I had taken like two or three microdoses and it was great.
Doesn't hurt.
It makes things fun and interesting and makes the colors a little brighter. And then I get to sort of there's like a plateau. It's probably about halfway, maybe a third of the way up this over the hill. And it's just coming on really strong to the point where I'm like, oh shit. I'm like keep taking my hat off and rubbing my head and being like, oh man, I'm laughing at myself at this point too. Cause I'm like, holy shit, you just did this. You just took way too much somehow. And I'm thinking about it, like the stuff I have to do the rest of the day. I have my friend's laptop in the trunk of my car that's parked at the bottom of the hill. Cause he's an idiot and he left it in my car and he doesn't drive. So I'm fucking been given the responsibility of trying to return this to him, which is just the worst thing ever. Just that's thing, something you should never do is never – if you ever leave your laptop someplace, you have to get it. The person you left it there, it's not their responsibility. So this is fucking driving me bonkers at this point. And I'm thinking about I got to cancel this podcast. I don't – because I just – I'm starting to realize I can't fucking – I can't function. I look at my phone. And it's just it's like looking through a weird halo, Klein. It's just looking through it's impossible. It's just a vortex of everything is moving and swimming. I get out two texts. I send a text to the Gastons of the studio saying, sorry, I think I have to cancel. So I'm still optimistic at this point. I'm thinking like, okay, this is gonna like fade or something. It's like a temporary sort of spike in this. It's gonna go away. It's like 12:15, 12:30 at this point. So I'm thinking,
oh God,
yeah. So I did that, and then I mean, the thing is, also a lot of the time and the details are really foggy to me now. I can't remember what happened when, but so I get these texts out. My phone is just. I can barely use it. It's like you know, you see people in physical therapy after they've been injured in an accident, like struggling to take a step.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like trying to type a text out, just like trying to get it, like, I gotta get it out. And then I'm like, okay, you know what I'm gonna do? I know this is not gonna go away. It's not like alcohol or weed where you can like walk it off or drink some coffee or eat a fucking pizza.
No, this is, you're looking at what, 40 minutes now has passed, 50 minutes? Yeah, you're not like even close to the top of the roller coaster. This is just the beginning phases of something. And you already are in the can't text phase. Mm. Oh, Lord.
So I'm like, okay, well, what I'll do is I'll walk over the hill to there's a water fountain at the top. Sort of over the lip of the hill, over the lip of the trail. I'll walk up there, drink a bunch of water, and then head back down and make my way home, I guess. And as I'm walking up the hill, there's like these rivulets of water that are on the channel next to the – it's a wide trail. It's like gravel, you know, gravel trail. But there's rivulets of water. I'm just watching them, and I keep thinking about how I'm walking on the right side of them where they have the hill on the other side of me. And the water's on the left side, how they're going to carve out the hill, and it's going to be a landslide. I'm going to fucking fall down in a mudslide. So I go to the other side of the water. I'm just walking at this point, and I basically no longer feel my legs. I feel like I'm just floating over the surface.
Wow.
I feel nothing at all. And I'm just tripping balls, tripping total fucking balls. And I keep having to stop. I keep getting winded, even though I'm taking it really slow. And I've done this trail.
Describe visually what you're seeing. Like what?
I don't think there wasn't any artifacts in what I was seeing. It was just a lot of vortexes and fractal sort of stuff, and just real heavy like breathing and everything had like this thrum and this deep sort of texture to it. I think that's the big thing was the texture. A lot of texture.
Yes.
So I get up over the hill, and this whole time also my brain is just racing with these like weird sort of cyclical thoughts, like thinking about – because this is the same time – this is what, 2 weeks ago. So I've been in the same thing where I'm in this holding pattern in my life right now where I can't really do a lot. I can't make a lot of plans. I'm kind of like – it's this weird in-between thing. So it's like this – that is in my head a lot because there's like this thing – I feel like this happens with actors a lot. I always think about Peter Sellers because he played all these characters and stuff. But a lot of people accuse Peter Sellers of having no ego himself. He wasn't a person. He was just this vessel that the characters live in. And as a result, he's sort of like – I mean it's a weird – he's a weird thing. He was like no one essentially. He was just – he was only someone when he was playing someone else. And even Javier Bardem talks about this, how – he is only happy when he's playing a character because he sort of fundamentally is not interested in what he thinks and how he feels because he likes to be – he doesn't enjoy that. It doesn't feel good. He wants to be someone else. So that's why he's such a good actor because he loves playing – he loves just diving into that and being the other person. So I'm thinking about that shit because it's like I haven't done anything like that in a while. So I'm sort of like I feel a little bit blank. I feel a little bit like I don't have a lot of identity at the current time. I don't, because of because of that stuff going on with me. So, but that stuff is just amplified, and it's like cycling in my head. I'm thinking about all this stuff. It's like my relationship, all my career, all this stuff. It's just fucking cycling. And I'm thinking, okay, I have to get through this. I know that this will end. I know it will, but just because that's how it works. Like, even if I didn't want it to end, if I was like having the greatest time ever and didn't want it to end, you're going to come down. You're going to sober up. So
yes,
I keep telling myself that. And so all I got to do is give myself something to do while something constructive and safe to do while that happens. And so I'm like, oh, I'll climb over this hill. I probably get about two thirds of the way up. It's probably like a maybe 2 mile trail, but it's pretty steep. And I just get so fucking winded. I can't do it. And I'm thinking like, oh, I have to. In my head, I was like, I have to do this. I have to get over there and get to that water. If I don't do that, then I will have failed. But then I had this realization where like, I don't have to do that. It's a victory if I allow myself to not have to do that. Like, I don't need to do that. The victory is realizing that I don't need to do this thing to be happier, to like to feel good. So then I was like, I mean, this is all monumental thinking in my head, which me saying out loud right now doesn't really feel that emphatic. But at the time, it's like this big thing. Like a
yeah,
big
you're
idea.
In the land of the gods right now. You're in the mm-hmm. realm of myth. So everything is going to feel like that. Everything's they're victories and failures and tragedies of the most extreme type that can happen when you're in this state.
Yeah, everything is amplified so much. I decided to turn back around then. At this point, I'm basically – like I've been on this trail so many times. I've probably been on this trail about 60 times since I moved here. Like, it's where I go. It's my standard run. I run my bike to the – run my bike or drive my car to the place, park it, run up the hill, over it, and then down again, and then go home. And I realize, like, I look around. I don't know where I am. I'm laughing to myself because I know there's like a part of my brain that knows – that this is me tripping, but there's also the part of my brain that's present that's being affected that says, I don't know where the hell I am right now. I don't recognize any of this. I don't know where I am. So I'm laughing because it's like this thing where the duality of it, where I'm laughing at this person who doesn't know where he is, but the other part of me is like, it's so funny to me because you're this place you've been 1,000 times, yet you're lost. Like what a weird thing to be feeling. And also I keep laughing. I'm still laughing at myself just because I can't believe I'm telling myself, Johnny, I can't believe you fucking did this. You dumbass. You did this.
Because you
today.
Have you shit just, to do today. And now you yeah, realize this is like a full blown trip.
Yeah. Just like casually taking a massive sled load dose of LSD in the daytime to just incapacitate me.
Ooh, so, Lord, man. That is the if there ever was a recipe for a bad trip, that fits it, man. It's like it's an unexpected dosage that you don't – maybe you don't even know how much you took.
Exactly.
With shit that you need to do. Oh, wow. That is a gory, gory beginning to a trip.
And then I walk down the hill. I see one or two people coming up, and I'm also super paranoid, of course. For no reason,
sure.
But I am. I get down the bottom of the hill, and you know, I cannot drive. I mean, I shouldn't, and I cannot. So both are true. And I walk to my car. I think it's like one or two cars. There's probably like maybe 50 cars in this parking lot. I think I'm the only car there at this point. Walk to my car, unlock it, get in. I see what is a law enforcement pickup truck,
of course,
parked. I know, fucking, I was like, this is ridiculous, man. I feel like I'm in Fear and Loathing or something.
Here's what I've noticed. When I am in a particularly like intense psychedelic state, and I've talked to other people who've had this very same experience, I will see a cop, guaranteed,
yeah.
And or I will see a severely mentally disabled person.
Oh shit! Okay, yeah.
Those manifests sometimes too. Where you like in that heightened state, you see a person who, you know what, who has some kind of severe disability,
right?
And you see through the disability to their soul. Like you see, like, wow, this person is in this incredibly challenging incarnation, but is still, you know, the their consciousness, their transcendent potential, is you could just feel it emanating out of them, and the kind of penance that they're doing, or this kind of suffering they're going through. Anyway, so go ahead. You witness
So I see this cop, it's a pickup truck. I think it's a sheriff, and I'm like, okay, just gotta be cool. I'm just a guy leaving the rain trail. Go to his car, and I'll unlock the car, which was very difficult. I get inside, and I'm just like kind of fumbling around with stuff. I'm like, okay, I have another hat. I have a knit hat.
Do you have breathing? Is the truck? Is it breathing in there? Is the console and the is everything kind of melting?
There wasn't any melting. It was more just like breathing and just general disorientation, like sure. kind of like nausea, like visual nausea. And then I see that I look at the truck, and I'm trying to not look at the truck, but I realize, oh, it's just a park. It's like a park ranger person, so it's not like a cop. So I relax a little bit, and then the cop truck moves around, so it's not seeing anymore. So I feel a lot better then. I change, put my hat on and this jacket, and I'm like, okay, I guess I'm gonna walk home. I mean, it's not that far. It's like 2.5 miles.
Yeah.
So I lock up the car. I make sure I double check. I think I double back to the car, make sure it was locked. Have my keys in my wallet and my phone in my pockets. I knew my friend's laptop was still in the fucking trunk of this car parked in a park. And I'm still thinking like, oh, the cop's going to see me. Like, what's this guy doing? He's like coming to his car, changing and leaving it there. Like, that's suspicious as fuck, which it kind of is suspicious. Like, what the fuck am I doing on a rainy day with a hood on?
Yes.
Like, it looks fucking weird. So, but I'm like, what? I just can't. That's what I kept thinking too, is I can't. God forbid I have to have a conversation with someone, or I have to be helped.
God.
Like, if someone started talking to me, then I don't even know what I would do.
You'd stammer a bunch. You'd be like, I don't, you know, and that.
Nightmare.
I've had that happen where it's pure speech, like
paralysis,
where I'm talking to someone, like I. Though, can you the wall? What? And then you're greeted with a look of like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then you're like, I've gone nuts. I've gone insane.
That's exactly what I was worried about. And so, I mean, I have like my nice hiking boots on that are waterproof. I have like heavy socks. So luckily, like all this shit just happened to be prepared to walk home.
Yes.
And I had like enough warm stuff on.
Trail of tears.
What's that?
A trail of tears.
Yeah. So I start walking home, and it's just I'm walking, and it's the same thing where I'm fucking having all these crazy cyclical thoughts about my identity and just everything, being paranoid. I keep seeing mailmen. I don't know why. I saw like three different mailmen, and one of them looked like a weird little tinker, like some sort of a hobbit type guy.
Yeah.
So I'm freaked out by any interaction. I keep thinking there's people watching me. Like, look how weird that guy's walking. Why is he doing that? Why is he crossing the water at this point when he should do it here?
Dude, mailmen give me the fucking heebie-jeebies when I'm tripping. And I don't know why. They're like, what are they doing? They're the most innocent government workers, and yet they seem like they're wearing those weird hats, and they seem like little fucking blue little bees buzzing around with papers, shoving it into the hive. It's very trippy I get paranoid from looking at mailmen when I'm high.
There's something about it. I think it's also the way the mailman, like I had this moment of, well, maybe this guy is the person out here who would understand me right now the most. Maybe this guy just wants to reach out, and he's having – his life is difficult, and he doesn't feel recognized or listened to or appreciated. I kept thinking that, or maybe the opposite. Who knows? It's like you see a dog that looks lonely.
So you're getting waves of compassion. Now your Buddha heart's opening up, and you're feeling like the suffering of the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was feeling all that stuff, and I kept thinking about like this. There was a person who was walking in front of me. And I was sort of following them. Like, I'm gonna follow this person. They're gonna be my guide, and I'll just do. If they can go through this, I can too, kind of thing. And just anytime I'd see someone, I would just be I don't know. I'm not even sure. I probably look like a crazy person. I probably was saying like hello or ha, just weird sort of overly aware interactions. And then I would I made it home. It was a long walk. I was soaking wet because there was so much accumulated water. I had to wade through all this water. So in a way, it was actually kind of cool. Visually, it was really pretty seeing all these like sycamore trees that looked. I can never look at a sycamore tree the same now because they look like they are made by a computer. They look like so fractal when they all have the leaves on them.
Yeah, they do. They do. Trees. You know, whenever I see trees, I like to imagine that you're looking at some kind of multi-dimensional form that is like coming into the time-space continuum, but that's connected to some more complex object that transcends time and space.
And it makes sense. Yeah,
like it's the you're looking at the just the tentacles of a thing coming through, or the I don't know. Yeah, so and the waving of the trees and the mm-hmm. It feels as though like that undulation is related more to something other than the wind.
So
you get home. Now look, we gotta cut to the peak of this trip only because I have foolishly scheduled another podcast within the next 10 minutes. So.
Well, the peak of it is I get home. I call Britt. I called the girlfriend when I started tripping. I called her and told her what was happening. And I called her when I left my car so that she knew just to like tell someone like, hey, this is happening to me. And then I think I texted you too. I texted Doug as well telling him about it. And then I get home and I called her and told her I was home. But I basically stayed on the phone with her for on and off for a couple hours because everything was so difficult physically for me to do. And I was just, at one point I went to the bathroom and vomited a bunch.
Oh no.
I had like this weird, like come to Jesus sort of moment. Like I felt like I have to go forward and live my life with love and not be like after I thought I was dying. I was looking at the toilet and everything. It looked hideous. It looked disgusting, right? It looked like just like, I felt like I was living in this place that was just filthy. Everything I looked at was filthy and disgusting, especially when you're sick. You just feel that weighs on you. So I vomited a bunch and then I felt a lot better afterwards. And then I think I threw up again, but this time it was an emergency and I threw up all over the fucking carpet.
Jesus, Johnny, this is such a terrible trip.
I know, it's crazy, man. And also I kept hearing all the fucking sounds of electricity and these weird sort of sounds like this, like
What do you think that was?
Like ramping up. Sick, but...
what do you think that sound was?
I don't know what it was. I mean, I've been playing that game Overwatch a lot, and it definitely sounds like a certain sound in that game. I think that's sort of a coincidence, not so much a thing that actually was...
Well, do you think it was coming from the world or coming from inside your head?
It was definitely coming from inside my head.
Oh, God!
It was coming from inside my head, and also there was things that were augmented, too. There was, like, sounds were augmented. And, I mean, I basically was sitting at one point, at the peak of the trip, I was sitting in the beanbag in the living room, and I was looking at the Christmas tree, and I felt like I was in some sort of a weird vortex, like I was looking through a tunnel into life, and I was looking at this existence, and I was it was something where the idea of living, the idea of being alive in this dimension, in this reality, seemed like a separate thing and kind of not so much, I guess, kind of worthless or just sort of not important or special or unique. The kind of thing where it was the kind of thing I understand how people do terrible things to themselves or others if they've taken a shitload of LSD and have some sort of propensity for that.
Oh, that's
like I could
scary.
See it. It's like, oh, I could see accidentally ending my life here just because I don't see any kind of it just doesn't make sense. The idea of this reality doesn't really make any sense. But what I kept going back to is just telling myself over and over again, like, I know this is going to end. Like, I know it is. Even if I didn't want it to end, it's going to end. So all these things I'm thinking, however absurd and however real they feel in the moment, I know they're going to go away. At least the intensity of them.
That's amazing because that is in one of the ways to mitigate suffering in Buddhism is to acknowledge the impermanence of your situation. Because no matter what situation you're in, as miserable as it may be, it won't last. And
yeah, we're just visiting.
And did that work to help?
It definitely worked. That worked, and also giving myself little miniature tasks, like small things. Okay, I just need to get a glass of water. Okay, I just need to plug in my phone in here so I can have the ringer on, so I can, if Britt calls me, I can talk to her, so I can have someone to talk to for a little bit.
Good God.
Just little things. I kept doing that. And also the big thing that got me was that, so I kept going, I was thinking about this. I was like rationalizing, like, what is this? How does it work? This world we live in, all the like good and bad and evil, and what is it, and all just things that don't make any sense contextually. But then I kept going back to, okay, so if this reality that we live in right now, the one that I'm talking to you right now on this podcast, in this world where Trump is the president and all these things, if that world is obviously there's all these sentinels that are maybe evil, or there's all these things that are negative and vectors in the world, but still it's so fucking popular. This reality is very popular. So there must be something about it that is a reason to stay in it, to come back to it, and not to die.
The university.
So, yeah, there's something there. So it's worth not untethering myself from reality and like disappearing. So I kept saying that, like, okay, you have to come back because you have to. It's good. Even though there's all these bad things about it, there's enough good to where it's worth coming back to figure it out.
So you had in the end, it appears that there was some kind of existential realization about how even in the suffering of the world, there's still reasons to be here.
I guess so. I think that's what it is. Because it's almost like the whole thing, 6 million people can't be wrong kind of thing, which to some extent is true. Because for the most part, more people make good decisions than people make bad decisions.
I agree with that. And I think that's one of the things LSD will give you, is like, mm-hmm. it will give you the experience of hell. And then
yeah, it was utter hell.
It'll give you that. And then it'll also allow you the opportunity, if you can do it, to pull yourself out of that deep grotesqueness. Mm-hmm. Just by with your own mind, and then right. And do you think that this realization, do you think this trip had a positive impact on you?
Well, I guess so. If you don't die, I think that's a good one. I think it had a positive impact. I mean, it's hard to say exactly. I think any kind of torment. The word that I kept thinking was I was laughing at one point. Like, oh, this is torment. I'm in utter torment right now. Mm. And I think this has a positive impact in the sense where it's just experience that I will never forget, and it gives you, it galvanizes you against other things.
And it helps you understand the importance of knowing your dose. How incredible.
Yeah, exactly. It gives me a new appreciation for chemists.
If there's anything to carry away from it, is the how incredibly careful we have to be with these substances, because you can go so far into that world, and it's a great place to go if you're with friends and if you're in the right situation, you don't have anything to do. I'm glad you made it out okay, man. And I wish we could keep this conversation going. I've scheduled an episode in about 10 minutes, so I have to go, man. But
adjourned
until next time, my dear Johnny Pemberton. Where can people find you? I'm so glad you chose to stay with us.
Yes, I chose to stay. You can listen to my podcast on the Feral Audio Network called Live to Tape. And you can also listen to old episodes of Twisting the Wind that are available, that are fun and jaunty as well. All that stuff. Twitter is my name.
And I'll tell you guys, listen to the episode I did with Johnny on his podcast, because that was one of the favorite podcast episodes I ever did in my life.
It was outstanding. Amazing. I'm going to be on tour in February 13th. Through 17th, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, and Vancouver. Check out the dates on Twitter and everything. We got a lot of promotion going on. It's going to be a really cool, weird tour. So Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, and Seattle are going to be. Oh, we're doing the Kiss My Ass tour. Dicker Troy and Josh Fadem.
Damn.
Super weird. Crazy.
All dates will be at DougAndTrussell.com. Go see Johnny live. Johnny, I love you. Thanks for being on the show.
Love you too.
Thanks for listening, my dear brothers and sisters. That was Johnny Pemberton. You can find out everything you need to know about Johnny Pemberton by going to johnnypemberton.com. Listen to his podcast. Love him. Follow him on Twitter. Thank you, Blue Apron, for sponsoring this episode. Remember, blueapron.com/trussell. Do me the honor of subscribing to this podcast, won't you? And tell your friends how beautiful this planet really is. And remember, we're going to pass this test, and it's going to be you. See you soon. Bye.